Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the founder and CEO of Church Answers.
Jonathan, this is a first, I think.
No, I think we did one before.
Really?
With you on the road, yes.
Okay, well, okay, it is the first of a string of many then.
Probably so. That is probably more than likely the case, yes.
Okay, so you are in the Nashville studio. I see you with the glow of David Platt over your head, so I know where you are. And the production studio in Virginia is Amy J. And I am in Florida looking out at the water as I speak.
Yeah.
Suffering. I love technology.
Yes, I bet you do.
Love technology. So, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we had to be in a studio with all kind of soundproofing and all kind of equipment. And now things have advanced so much, we're able to do this way. So I'm grateful for Rainer on Leadership being on the road. And always I'm grateful for our sponsor.
Yes. And, you know, they have technology that allows you to get fully accredited online undergraduate and graduate degrees at Midwestern. And they offer more than 25 degrees at both the undergraduate and master's level that are fully attainable online, from business to Bible, counseling to Christian education. You can prepare for your future at your own pace in your own location with Midwestern Online Studies. You can find out more about that at mbts.edu/online. So kind of a fitting sponsor today, Dr. Rainer, for the today's podcast.
Yeah, what I learned as a pastor, specifically six risks that I learned that I took as a pastor. Hey, by the way, before we leave Midwestern, we may have mentioned this in a previous podcast. I love it when Charles Smith sent either email or text, I think it was a text to you and me, and said, this guy said, I got to come to Midwestern because Rainer and Hal just won't shut up talking about him. So I'm coming to Midwestern. So I said, yeah, Charles, we're there for you. So I'm grateful that some folks are listening to us. Typically, my way of doing autobiography is through illustration, talk about things that I've done at a church, and it'll have some application to the podcast. I may connect it to what some of my boys have done in the church, or just from what I've heard on Church Answers throughout the years, particularly at Church Answers Central, that forum, that incredible forum of 1,500 church leaders that are constantly interacting. So typically, I use that in an illustrative way. This time, it is going to be all autobiographical. And before you cut off the podcast, I want you to know that it's not just me talking about me. It is me talking about me in order to help you. So as you listen to this, first, there's some caveats. One, it's been a long time since I've been a pastor. So are these items going to be relevant? Yes. And you'll see why they transcend time when we get into them. And two, there are a number of pastors who have shared with me in current reality today how some of these things still apply to them as well. So even though it's autobiographical, I hope it's not so self-centered and egotistical that it becomes the Rainer show about Rainer, talking about Rainer in the entirety of Rainer. I hope it comes back as something that is very helpful. So we'll go with that, and we'll start talking about these particular issues.
All right, so these six risks that you took. The first one, I've heard this story before. You hired a staff pastor without the funds to cover the
salary. Yeah, that was at my church in St. Petersburg.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, well, let me get it theologically correct. In the providence of God, I am probably 20 minutes from that church as I speak right now. In St. Petersburg, right across the Skyway Bridge. I'm on the south side and the church is on the north side of the bridge in Tampa Bay. When I first went to that church, if you've ever listened to me, you've heard me say, I remember the previous year's worship attendance of 118. I don't know why that number sticks in my mind. It's kind of like, Jonathan, 318 sticks in my mind. You know why?
No clue.
That was the first time I got a locker in the seventh grade. It was locker number 318. Isn't that fascinating?
I guess.
Okay. Amy J's in Virginia saying it's fascinating, and you were yawning at that. Okay. 118 was the average worship attendance, and it was a revitalization. I didn't know it was a revitalization situation. Well, there was, and the entire staffing was me and, believe it or not, a full-time assistant. It's kind of hard looking back. It was hard to believe that we actually had two full-time people. Then I look back at what my pay was and I realized we didn't really have two full-time paid people because they were starving me. I'm going into this church and one of the first things I see is, at least at that time, from my perspective, the need for a staff person. And we were maxed out on budget just to pay me a paltry salary, which it was at the time. And I don't remember what the assistant salary was, but it was less than mine. So it had to be paltrier. So to say, okay, we need another full-time staff person.
Yeah.
Well,
and the staff person too, I think you do need to make a point about what the position you were trying to add. Cause it was like evangelism and outreach or evangelism and discipleship, right?
Yep. In fact, that's going to be number five.
Okay.
The type of person that I hired. So I knew that we had to have an outward focus, and I knew it simultaneous to that, we had to have a good assimilation if we had a good outward focus. So in other words, Matthew 28, 18 through 20, you know, we had to make disciples. And so in order to make disciples, we had to reach people with the gospel and we had to properly disciple them. So there were two areas that were lacking. And that area, which we'll get into in just a few minutes, was groups and evangelism. At the time, we called it Sunday school. And to find someone of that ilk that could come for what we were willing to pay was a challenge. But what we had to pay was somewhere around zero to negative, because we were in pretty rough shape. So there was this lady in the church, her name was Ann, and I presumed that she had some wealth in her family just because I'd been to their home. It was on the water. It had to be a multi-million dollar home. Met her husband, a physician who did not come to church. Just got to know them and really liked the physician, even though he wasn't a believer. We just hit it off well. And finally, I just showed up at his house one time. Those in the days when you could do that. And he wasn't working that particular early evening. And so I said, "Doc, I want to make a proposition to you." Not that kind of proposition. I want to make a proposal to you. "I want to make a proposal to you, Doc. I want you to pay for the salary of a staff person for 1 year." And he looked at me. He said, "I've never given anything to the church." I said, "Even more so, I want you to pay for the staff person 1 year. I want you to pay for all the salary benefits for 1 year." And he looked at me. He said, "Well, that's crazy, because I can't, let's say I do commit to it. I'm not going to commit beyond a year." I said, "Exactly. I don't want you to commit beyond a year, because if we don't have the budget to pay for it, it would have been a failure anyway." So to make the longer story short, he agreed to 1 year. I was just really shocked. So not only did I have to go find someone with this combination that we'll talk about, but I also had to find someone that I could only give that person 1 year guarantee of pay. And that person moved. You know him.
Yeah.
You know him well.
That's Chuck. A lot of faith right there.
A lot of faith on both of our parts, but particularly his.
Yeah.
And was up front with him. It worked out well. Chuck became an incredible leader in the church. He went with me when I went to church in Birmingham. And since that time, he has been leading a church in Florida that has just been incredible, multi-site church. It's in the Windermere area that has just really done well. But I hired a pastor without funds. So number one, worked.
That's good.
Yep.
All right. So number two, attempting to buy an entire church facility from another church.
This was in Birmingham. The facility was really nice. It was a Methodist church. The facility was only 5 years old. And the cost back then was well over $1 million. It didn't have much acreage. And again, you say, "Well, that's not much for a facility and some acreage." It may have had 3 or 4 acres, but we had outgrown our current location. And I was thinking multi-site, which we'll get in at number three. And so I got to know the pastor of the Methodist church, and he said, "We're going to have to relocate. This is just too small for us." So, well, this would be a perfect facility. I think it held about 200 for a single worship service, and probably could have gone to a capacity of 500 with a multi-service. And I said, in principle, I said, you got a deal. We'll buy it from you. I said, "I got to check with the church." Church didn't like that idea, Jonathan.
What was their opposition to it?
"You want to go buy another church? And that's, tell me what we're going to do. Well, we're going to have two churches." This was 1991.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
Well, I was going to say, that leads into the next one, though. Going multi-site before multi-site was cool.
We'll get to that one. I got shot down so quickly, you would have thought I was a skeet in the sky being shot by a shooter. It was just like that. I mean, I had some friends on the finance committee. I never got this to the church. I mean, you talk about, and I would say things like, well, it's only a little over $1 million. And they'd look at me like, you know, what are you smoking, dude? Legal or illegal today? And Jonathan, when I go to Birmingham, there are times, it's actually in the Shelby County area, so south of River Chase, if you know the Birmingham area. When I go there, I still will drive by that church, still a Methodist church there.
What happened to the church eventually?
I assume it did not move.
Okay.
I assume he got shot down just like I did.
Oh,
I don't know. Or maybe another church came in because I don't remember the name of it. But boy, did I get shot down on that one. And I lost some credibility, too, because they thought I was crazy for even asking.
Mm. Well, you know, that does roll into the next one, though, going multi-site before multi-site was cool. They didn't quite get the vision of that. And I know that led you to having a retail storefront type multi-site area.
Yeah. We actually leased out 4 full bays, which was, I don't remember the square footage. My guess is it's probably 5,000 to 6,000 square feet of space. Not a lot, but a good one. But again, this was in the early 90s. And to my knowledge, there was only one multi-site church of renown. There could have been others. And it was Perimeter Church in Atlanta, PCA, Presbyterian Church of America. It was really the only model that I had out there. And of course, their polity is different than ours. And so for them, it was an easier situation. Once again, we were landlocked and perhaps could have gotten more creative by going multi-day instead of multi-site, but I didn't think about it. So I said to myself, what rule says that we have to, what biblical text, let me put it that way, says we have to have one particular site to meet on. And I knew that we had a significant number of members. The church was in Jefferson County, Alabama. The retail frontage was in Shelby, just to the south of us. And I knew that we had a number of members who lived in that area and would drive past it. And I saw the possibility of it. And so, you know, I kind of went through the back door on this. I did not seek church funding. I sought donor funding. And I found one donor in the church that was willing to underwrite it. So I got the church to agree to it for a one-year experiment funded by that one person. This one proved to be a success, at least in the short term, in the sense that the site got started. I think, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. Probably at the point of my departure, attendance was around 150, 175. I don't know, but it was healthy enough, especially for the small area that it had. And it was the boost the church needed. But I can tell you at this point, there were many people there who just did not understand what I was doing. My successor did not understand the multi-site model. Well, let me be fair to him. My successor did not embrace the multi-site model. And so he sent the church off as its own church, as an autonomous church. And to this day, that church thinks of me as their founding pastor. In fact, they wanted me to come to an anniversary because they wanted me to be theirs and the founding pastor. I didn't know they existed.
You founded churches you didn't even know existed. That's great.
I didn't. So that one, I would say some success and some failure. Success in the idea that we got it off the ground. Failure in the sense that it really did not last in the church. But it did. It did end up birthing another church eventually.
All right. Now, this next one, I'm guessing this is either a Sunday night or a Wednesday night thing, but having a combination meal and worship service.
It was Sunday night.
Okay. I don't hate Birmingham. This idea.
What's that?
I don't hate this idea.
Well, you don't hate the idea because of the first of the two words, the meal part.
Meal and worship. But, I mean, you know, hey, Acts 2:42, man, break bread, fellowship, prayers.
You know what? Jonathan actually used that text to persuade the church to move in that direction.
That's what it says.
We built a new fellowship hall. And guess what? Like most fellowship halls, it was used rarely, but it was really, really nice. Good sound, good stage and all that. I took that as the opportunity to try to boost a dying Sunday evening service.
Okay.
And I said, let's come casual. I don't know if I said, bring your own coffee. Or bring your own meal. We may have had sandwiches a few times just to get it jump started. But the idea was, hey, let's sit around the table. Let's eat. Let's drink coffee. And let's have a worship service. I thought that would boost Sunday night. And it did for about 3 weeks.
Oh.
And then it just, the newness of it wore off. And the fact that people were asking the question, at least intuitively, why am I coming back to a Sunday night service when I came on Sunday morning? You know, that question, that ultimately became the dominant question there. And we ended up going back into the worship area.
Oh, man.
With 125 people and a 800 to 900 capacity worship center.
I like the idea there. I think there's merit. It's just one of those things that it may just be too far out there for people to really grasp. But
well, when I was a member, may still be a member, when I was at Brentwood Baptist in the Nashville area, I went to the 8 o'clock service in a fellowship hall area with tables and took my coffee and sometimes even a donut with me.
Yeah.
So actually, I found some vindication in the fact that I was able to do that as a church member, and I fell miserably as a pastor.
Mm. Well, I applaud the effort there.
You applaud the food.
Well,
you
yeah.
always applaud the
I do.
Food.
I do. But I mean, it seems like it would bring more fellowship, more community. And, you know, maybe you just were ahead of your time on that one, too. I don't know.
No, the young families wanted to get their kids to sleep before school. I wanted to get them in bed.
No, there's that, too.
Sunday night.
All right. Number five, we kind of talked about this one at the top of the show, but hiring a staff member with dual responsibilities of groups and evangelism.
The reason this succeeded is because of the person.
Oh, yeah.
The concept, anybody can think of a combined position. And many churches make the mistake of hiring combined positions just because they think that's the way it's supposed to be done. Music, education, youth, music. I mean, the traditional combinations for so many, many years, even children and youth can and a family minister type thing, depending on the person, can be a misfit. But I almost said I noted that would have been K-N-O-W-E-D-D-E-D, something like that. I knew that our two biggest needs were outward focus, and commensurate with that was assimilation. So I really wanted someone that could do both, that could essentially do discipleship through groups and that could do evangelism. I found the person, and you know, you talk about just God's favor. Finding a guy like Chuck Carter that we mentioned earlier, and his ability, his enthusiasm, the reason that succeeded is because we got the right person.
Yeah.
And it's very Jim Collins-esque. We got the right person in the right seat on the bus, and that's why that one worked. Otherwise, I'm not so sure.
All right. So, but that goes, though, I mean, regardless of the staff place, having the right person is always important. I mean,
exactly.
You know,
it's just a different kind of, I don't hear that combination too much, evangelism and groups.
Yeah. Oh, well, a lot of churches sometimes will pit discipleship and evangelism against one another. You know, we are this or that and not both. I think that's a good example of the need for us to be both. And then finally, getting a new Christian to lead the welcome ministry. How did that work out?
Yes and no. That was in my first church. That was Steve. New believer, introvert, made him head of the greater ministry, actually made him the only person in the greater ministry because we were so small.
I was going to say, that's a small church. The deacon body was Merle.
Yes. His introversion was overcome just because he knew people coming in. It took about 6 to 9 months for Steve to take the profanity out of his welcomes.
Oh, wow.
So that was the failure part. When I had a deacon meeting with my deacon body named Merle, he said, I like Steve out there. I really like him out there welcoming people. But preacher, you got to just get him to stop cussing when he welcomes people. When they come up and he says, how the are you? I mean, these Baptists don't take it really well.
Wasn't Steve related to Merle, though?
No. There's another Steve. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Steve, Merle had a son named Steve.
Yeah.
This was another Steve.
Oh, Steve number two. Okay.
Yes, this is Steve number two. I know where you're getting confused there because you've heard the story so many times.
Because they're both named Steve. That's why I'm getting confused.
In a church that at the time was probably about up to 15 or 20, we had two Steves there.
Yeah.
Merle Steve was a long-term Christian. This Steve was a new Christian.
Gotcha.
And this Steve did a good job, but it took 6 to 9 months to get the profanity out of his normal conversation.
Wow.
And there would be times when he would give a welcome, like, you know, how are you? And then he would look at me and say, ah, and he'd use another profanity no. to say, I didn't mean to say that.
That's amazing.
So that was just a part of who he was. So it was partly successful and partly not. The point of all of this is risk. Sometimes risk are steps of faith. Sometimes they're just actions of stupidity, and I have exercised both.
Well, that was the question I was going to have, is it only in hindsight that you really know? Or some of these, maybe not these specific ones, but sometimes pastors take a risk that I think everybody around them is telling you, hey, this isn't going to work, and they do it anyway, and it really bites them. But is there a better way for you to kind of gauge this on the front end so that they don't bite you?
I found a tension in this. You want the wisdom of crowds, so you want to listen to people. You want to have a listening ear. But the more you bring into it, the more you're going to find objections to why it won't work. And so I always dealt with that tension of how much wisdom and input do I get in on the front end of this before I get to the point that I just get discouraged with people saying, we've never done it that way, it won't work.
Yeah,
Jonathan, I don't know if I ever got the balance just right, but we gave it a try. And I hope for some of you pastors, this has been encouraging. Church leaders, helpful, and at times a reality that, yes, you can make mistakes and move on.
Yeah,
and speaking of those who don't make mistakes, we are so grateful for our sponsorship.
Yep, Vanderblumen Search Group. They are the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped thousands of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. You can find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group by visiting westaffthechurch.com. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
I'm thinking of the churches that I covered. I covered three out of the four.
You didn't do anything at that second church, apparently.
it was a good church. I was grateful for the opportunity. The second church was in the Louisville area when I was a student there. So I covered three out of the four. 2020 hindsight is very clear. I hope going forward, I learn from it and all my other positions of leadership.
Well, but isn't that really the moral of the story here? The big lesson to take away is to learn from the risks that you took before. And to apply that going forward, right?
Yeah, if I could say I've learned from all of them. I will say I've done some dumb things going forward as well. But yes, that is the lesson.
Now, you know training your volunteers and leaders is important in your church, but do you ever feel like you don't know where to start? That's why Lifeway Leadership developed Ministry Grid. With their library of 3,000 ministry training videos, the work has been done for you and you'll be able to train everyone in your church. It's training you can trust, and each Ministry Grid video features an experienced ministry leader who has been where you are now. You can even get training on Dr. Rainer's book, I Am a Church Member, and create a new members class. You can also customize any training by adding videos, PDFs, YouTube videos, and more. And now Ministry Grid has one plan with one price that gives you unlimited access to train your entire church. Head to ministrygrid.com for more information. Once again, that is ministrygrid.com. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership, a member of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app, and join us online at tomrainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.